and welcome to this podcast from the International Crisis Group. I'm Gabriela Kizabek-Davalos, the Communications Officer, and with me in the studio today is Rashid Abdi, Crisis Group's Somalia Analyst. Today, we will be talking about Islamists in Somalia, which are very divided at the moment. How does this affect the country and maybe even the wider region?
The division within the Islamist groups in Somalia basically makes any strategy by the transitional federal government to reach out much more difficult. Also, what has happened, this division, which has been going on for some time, has created a much more extreme movement or faction within the Islamist insurgency. And this group is now basically the one which is in charge. And that has created the threat of greater instability in Somalia, as well as the threat of terrorism in the region. Now, also, let's not forget that this division is not only a threat, but also an opportunity, because the transitional federal government, which has that opportunity to exploit these divisions within the Islamist insurgency, to begin to see which groups are amenable to some kind of a political settlement. But unfortunately, the transitional federal government has failed to capitalize on these divisions. So it's these divisions are both a threat and also an opportunity.
Can you tell us, are these divisions something new? And if yes, where do they come from?
The divisions have always existed. But when the Islamists were in power in 2006 in Mogadishu, before the Ethiopian invasion, they wanted desperately to consolidate themselves. They wanted the public to be on their side. So what happened is that there was a decision taken not to provoke internal power struggle, internal divisions. So they had this facade of unity and cohesion, but beneath that surface, there were internal rifts, there were ideological differences. And the reason was clear. If they had begun theological or ideological debates, then the risk was that the movement will start fragmenting, and then they will start drifting apart, and then the enemy, who are the Ethiopians and the transitional federal government, will basically take advantage of it. And so there was a deliberate attempt to basically appear cohesive, to appear united, and basically to put a lead on all those ideological divisions.
And that has changed now?
That has absolutely changed. And I think, first of all, came the Ethiopian invasion. So the Ethiopian invasion basically created that first fragmentation, whereby the movement split into two. Those extremists who wanted to continue the guerrilla struggle, and those who fled into exile and wanted a political process. And these are the groups that went to Asmara and Djibouti, then joined the transitional federal government and created the government of national unity. Whereas those people who remained to fight, to wage the insurgency against the Ethiopians, the bulk of them were Al-Shabaab, and they are the more extreme elements within the Islamist movement. That was the first fragmentation. Then the other fragmentation came in 2009, once the new president was elected. The president hoped that because he was an Islamist himself, he was a moderate Islamist, he probably knew these figures in the insurgency by name, probably some were even his friends. And the international community too said this, if there was any man who could had the chance of, making a deal with the insurgency, it must be Sheikh Sharif, because he was one of their own. So the Sharif began efforts to reach out to the insurgency, and that created the first division. There were those who said, let's make a deal with Sharif, and there were those who said, no, let's not make a deal with Sharif. So that process of engagement by Sharif, which probably may not have been very strong, began creating friction within the movement. There were those who were willing to work with Sharif and those who said, no, he's a traitor to the cause. So from then onwards, the movement began fragmenting. And then towards the end of 2009 and the beginning of this year, 2010, the movement split further. What happened is that the foreign jihadis, people who have come to fight the jihad in Somalia, from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, from the Arab world, from neighboring countries in East Africa, these people took charge of Al-Shabaab. And again, it's because of the fear that Al-Shabaab will lose its identity, will merge with the transition of federal government. And this is not what the foreign jihadis want. The foreign jihadis want, this conflict to continue. So what they did is basically they took control of the organization. Some people will say they hijacked it again. So what they have done is to sideline those leaders they consider as ideologically soft, And this is what has happened. Now the movement is in the control of the foreign jihadis. And this is how the movement has evolved from a Somali nationalist movement now into an extremist movement which is led by the foreign jihadis.
So let's talk a bit about the two major Islamist forces in Somalia, the Al-Shabaab that you already mentioned and Hizb al-Islam. How influential are they at the moment in spite of all these divisions?
Let me start with Hizb al-Islam. Hizb al-Islam is a very diminished figure now, is a very diminished organization now. Is led by Hassan Dairawais, tends to take a more nationalistic, approach towards the country, tends to distance itself from the concept of global jihad. It's also led by somebody who has a lot of clan knowledge and clan support, Hassan Dairawais. Whereas the Al-Shabaab, believers in the concept of global jihad. So the two movements have drifted apart ideologically. Their concept of Sharia is much more or less the same. Areas controlled by Al-Shabaab and areas controlled by Hizb al-Islam, you see similar kind of Sharia imposed. Very harsh punishment, amputation, flogging, they curtail women's rights, they do all sorts of horrible things. So in that aspect, they are not very different from one another. But when you look at them politically, they tend to take different lines.
And what would you say should the transitional federal government do to stop forces like Al-Shabaab and Hizb al-Islam from radicalizing Somalis at home, in the region and within the diaspora?
The government is extremely weak. It controls very little territory in Mogadishu. 3/4 of the city is under the control of Al-Shabaab. The bulk of the country in south central Somalia is in the hands of Al-Shabaab. The government's military capability is almost zero. So there is very little the government can do while it is in such a weak state. The government can only probably begin to do something about the problem of radicalization only when it's able to achieve some bit of gain, some territory, when it's able to hold territory and then begin to rebuild its security infrastructure. Unless this government becomes modestly functional, there's very little it can do about about the issue of radicalization. But at the same time, this is not to say that, Somali leaders, moderate Somalis, don't have an opportunity to help reverse the pace of radicalization. Moderate clerics can do that in mosques. They can do that through the internet, because again, the jihadis have used the internet very cleverly to radicalize, not only inside the country, but also abroad, where there is a huge Somali diaspora in, North America as well as Europe. So there are a lot of things that can be done against radicalization, but I'm afraid that is not a process which the TFG is going to lead, because again of its weak state. It's something which moderate Islamist leaders, both in the diaspora and also inside Somalia, can do. Also, countries which host huge Somali communities can also work with moderate clerics in order to reverse the process of radicalization. And I think countries like the UK have already begun that, where they liaise with Somali community leaders in order to begin sensitization campaigns, because the Al-Shabaab have been recruiting from the Somali diaspora. A number of suicide bombers in Somalia recently are people who are recruited in the West. And so the reason is clear, because Al-Shabaab targets these youngsters who are finding life in the West a bit difficult, in the sense that they are psychologically a bit alienated. They feel they are feeling difficulty in adjusting to life in the West. They have an identity crisis. So Al-Shabaab targets these young people, radicalizes them, recruits them, then tells them to carry out suicide operations back in Somalia.
And what about the U.S. and other leading Western states concerned about the links that you already mentioned, maybe to Al-Qaeda?
For security reasons, countries in the West need to work with moderate Muslim leaders to de-radicalize the Somali people. I'm not sure the countries like the United States will be able to do much about the problem of radicalization. But I suspect that greater engagement of the United States in the peace building, in the reconciliation strategy, may go a long way in reversing that image of the United States as this power which is exclusively concerned with only counterterrorism. So I think when Somalis begin to see the United States engage more in rebuilding state institutions, in helping the transition of federal government restructure its security apparatus, when it helps capacity building in all the sectors, then I think that will help to reverse that notion, or basically it will help people to change their view of the United States as this power which is exclusively concerned with nothing else in Somalia but counterterrorism.
Thank you very much. That was Rashid Abdi, Crisis Group Somalia analyst, talking about the divided Islamists and the challenges in Somalia. For more information about this country, go to our website www.crisisgroup.org. Thank you for listening to this International Crisis Group podcast.